a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. This is Joe Kufka with the Governor's Office. We're ready to begin our weekly news conference with Governor Mike Rounds. We also have Jason Dolges, who is the Commissioner of the Budget, our Department, Bureau of Finance and Management. I'm sorry, Governor Rounds.
Good morning. I'm hoping that we'll take some questions this morning, but I wanted to just kind of start out a little bit and share some background. As you know, I have the opportunity to respond. You've had a chance to listen to both Democrats and Republicans this morning. Last evening, members of my staff were given a proposed list of ideas about cuts in the budget by our Republican colleagues in the House and the Senate. We are waiting for them to put some meat on the bones, so to speak, in terms of what they want to do with these cuts and revenue enhancements. I don't believe that there's anything new in what they're proposing. They're ideas that are out there. These ideas are ones that we looked at, and we either have decided that we prefer not to do them in our original budget, or in some cases, we think they have to clarify a little bit more in terms of where they're coming up with some of the numbers that they proposed so far. So we'll wait until they actually announce and are able to explain what they're proposing, and then we'll take the opportunity at that point to respond specifically to what they're suggesting. I also heard earlier today, and I know that the Democrats were in the leadership for the Democrat House and Senate members, and they had talked a little bit about some of their ideas about cutting the budget, which a number of folks in here, I think, offered some good questions to them. Let me share with you a little bit about the budget process and about where the money goes right now. I've asked them to put together some large charts, and I'm going to ask Joe if he would just pull out, let's take out the dollar one here first. Some of you are familiar with this, but I think this is important to recognize, because what this shares is where we actually spend the money that the taxpayers of South Dakota entrust to state government. 49 cents out of every dollar goes into education. That includes K-12, higher ed, technical schools, and then the Department of Education, which then administers those funds. Well, that 49 cents, when you take that out of any budget cuts to begin with, as some people have suggested, and then you look at Medicaid, which includes taking care of people, which is the Medicaid program. And remember, we have 8,000 more people right now than a year ago that are eligible for Medicaid, because if you have over 10,000 more people that are not having a job, their kids are eligible for government services to take care of their health care needs. So when we look at taking care of people, that's Medicaid, it's the state hospital, and it's the temporary assistance to needy families, and then the Department of Social Services, Department of Human Services, and Department of Health, all of whom rely on basically a one-third state, two-thirds federal government match. When you take those out, that's 85% of the entire general fund of the state of South Dakota. Now that leaves you with 11 cents to what we call corrections, which are the prisons, the courts, public safety, and the Attorney General's office. You pull that out, you've got 4 cents left of what some people describe as the bureaucracy of state government. That 4 cents includes 8 departments, 4 bureaus, the governor's office, the legislature, and all 5 constitutional offices. And so when we start talking about where there's fat in state government, we simply ask people to tell us which program it is that they think is fat. Now, let me just share with you, if you take out and you say, as I believe the Democrat leadership suggested, that it should be across the board cuts, but don't do anything with education, which is 49 cents, and don't do anything with taking care of people, there was a suggestion that there was $400 million left to cut from. I disagree with those numbers, and I'm not sure where they got them, because if you actually look at what that amounts to, pull up the next chart here. Let's take them. Let me show you about where those dollars look like now. Not that one, but the next one over right there. Let's take a look at what those amounts to. State aid education, Board of Regents, technical education, and the rest of it, $607 million. Now, if you then also pull out medical welfare, and health and human services, social services, and so forth, you end up with $440 million plus $670 million. You've got a almost a $1.2 billion total amount. you don't have $400 million to cut anymore. And there are very few people that want us to cut and start opening up corrections. I mean, we've still got to have a prison system that works 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So as you start to take a look at where you can actually cut, there's not a lot left in there that you can start doing across-the-board cuts without eliminating programs that impact people back home, services to individuals. And that's what we want to bring out is none of the programs in state government, none of the services being provided by state government are items that have not been approved by the legislature in the past as a good idea. And so when we start talking in broad generalities about places where we can simply just cut government, you have to recognize that the vast majority of the dollars that come in, the state tax dollars that we're entrusted with, are directed every single year by the legislature to go back out to real people that rely on those services, K-12 education, technical schools, back into the universities. And if you cut universities, some folks say, well, that's an option. But in today's world, having a university education is becoming less and less of an option, or a technical education. And if you cut, it simply means that tuition goes up. Or you start restricting the number that you want. And right now, we've got young people that want to stay in South Dakota. I don't want to see that change. I think that long term, we want to be able to maintain the services and maintain the opportunities for those young people to stay here. Is it working? We've got more young people that are actively engaged in receiving a technical education through a technical school, or more young people actively engaged in receiving a degree at one of our universities than ever before in our history. New record enrollment. I think that's moving in the right direction at a time in which a recession is occurring nationally. And if we don't allow them to go to school, they enter a workforce which is struggling right now to find jobs. So I don't want to see that happen. But let me show you one more thing, because this is I think, also something that I just want to set the stage here in terms of our budget discussions. This shows where the tax dollars that the citizens of this state have entrusted state government, the legislature, and the governor's office in terms of where we spend the money that they entrust to us on an annual basis. And I wanted to show where the increases have been since going all the way back to 1995, since we instituted the K-12 formula, the one that a lot of your school districts will say is not a good formula, and yet take a look at what it's done for K-12 education. Of all the money coming in, where has it gone back out? Well, we've gone from $165 million back in 1995 to $389, almost $390 million. That's a 135% increase. A lot of it went into the K-12 system, but there's also property tax relief that's been included in that for the local property taxpayer as well. Medicaid, it's gone from $98 million to $296 million. A match, $1 of ours to about $2 of federal funds for people that have no place else to go to get their health care, primarily children or adults with disabilities. South Dakota has some of the strictest rules to get Medicaid of any state in the nation. It's not a freebie. It's not easy to qualify. But nonetheless, it's helping real people at a time that they need the services. Health, human, and social services is up 121%. Protecting the public, that's our correction systems, that's the court systems, the Attorney General's office, and the Highway Patrol. It's gone from $52 million to $129 million, or 148% increase. The rest of government, the bureaucracy, the part that everybody would like to point at and suggest is inefficient, well, since 1995, it's gone from $93 million down to $83 million, an 11% reduction in what people consider the bureaucracy. 8 departments, 4 bureaus, the legislature, the governor's office, and the general funds that go into all of our economic development efforts, a reduction of 11%. So I want to set the stage, because you're going to hear legislators start talking about where they want to make cuts. And when that happens, I want individuals to understand that when we put together our budget beginning last September, we did the best we could to deliver the services that we believe are necessary for the citizens of South Dakota at a time in which we had more people looking for those services because of higher unemployment, because of more people on Medicaid, and because we've got a record number of young people that want to attend college, that want to make a better life for themselves. as we go through this whole process and they start talking about across-the-board cuts, and you take a look at where all the changes have occurred in state government so far for over 15 years, think about whether or not we've done a good job of managing the resources that the taxpayers of this state have entrusted to us. Across-the-board cuts do not work because someone has to take a look at which programs you reduce. Our challenge will be, and we've already shared with our friends upstairs, that we'll talk about any program that they in the past have decided they wanted. And if they want to make a change now and say, we don't want that program anymore, that's a good public debate to have. That's a fair debate to have. But if it's, we think we're going to tell everybody to cut across the board, but then we're going to restrict it to certain areas only, and then on top of that, we want you to do the cutting, but we don't want to have to look, then I think we're going to have a real hard discussion about whether or not that's the way to do the public's business. Okay? Now, I've used up about 12 minutes of our press time today. I have, as we said earlier, Jason Dilges, who is here with us, who is the budget director, helps to prepare the budget for us each year. And I'd like to just open this up for your questions, comments, and thoughts.
Governor, are you saying you want the university system basically off limits for cuts?
No, I think in our judgment this year, and after proposing about $46 million in cuts last year, after imposing no increase on state employees, including our instructors at our universities, for 2 years in a row now, and providing no increase in providers for our patients under Medicaid for 2 years in a row now, and in asking the legislature to hold K-12 at 0% increase, I think you have to decide whether or not a rainy day fund is there for the purpose of trying to eliminate as much pain on individuals, citizens, as opposed to simply savings for savings' sake. As I remember back when we lost the video lottery back in 1994, the threat was we were going to lose it because of a Supreme Court decision. And during that time, I remember having discussions. I was in the legislature at that time. Part of the discussion that occurred was on the part of one of our members was, you know, if there was ever a chance in which we could just cut programs, this is it. We ought to make them feel the pain. And I remember the discussion that went on, the philosophical discussion about whether or not there should be pain felt by individuals. I've never forgotten that. And I don't think that's the role of government, is to inflict pain. I think the role of government and elected leaders is to manage a budget, use the taxes that are available and the resources that are available to reduce the amount of pain on individuals that need a helping hand. There's a whole lot of people out there right now that are without a job, down on their luck. You don't cut services, and you don't tell their kids you're going to make it tougher on them to get an education. And I think that's got to be a key part of this discussion.
Legislative leaders on, I think, both sides of the aisle have said that the reason they want to make cuts is they're afraid that the recession will continue next year and that the budget deficit will be huge, over $100 million, and that the cuts will have to come sooner or later. They want to soften the blow. Are you saying that you think that's not going to be an issue next year?
Actions speak louder than words. So far, we had proposed that they do a revision to Cutler-Gabriel, which would have allowed us to simply hold property tax mill rates at about the same level as what it was last year in an attempt to spread some of that cost out. They immediately rejected that. That increased the structural deficit this year and next year by over $4 million. You can make the case that, well, we just simply, you know, we're going to take it upon ourselves. But nonetheless, you have to recognize that that increases the structural deficit. I would suggest that we are more than willing to work with individuals who have plans for reducing the structural deficit, but I will insist that the plans that we use to balance the budget this year should reflect on changes in the structural deficit next year as well. Because if we look at and if we suggest that some, and as a matter of fact, we've had some bills upstairs that would have increased some revenues that have been defeated. We've got a proposal upstairs right now that that would have raised about $3 million, $3.5 million, we believe, in terms of the large projects and taking some of the excise tax back in from the large projects. I know that they're working on that. I hope that they're able to come to an agreement with us about a fair way to pull back in those tax dollars. We will work with them in a negotiated fashion to find a way to increase some revenues for us. But I don't think we can overestimate the amount of revenues coming in, because if they overestimate the amount of revenues coming in, and they have not fixed the structural deficit next year, and we're going to take a very cautious approach to overestimating revenue estimates as well.
If I can just follow up on, on that. You cited the Cutler-Gabriel exemption as one example of actions speaking louder than words. Are you saying that you think the legislators are prioritizing property taxpayers over the unemployed and people who need state assistance?
No, I don't think I would put it so much that, but I think what they're having a difficult time doing is recognizing some of the tough choices that they really have to make. And this is one year in which I think for the very small amount of impact it would have had on the total of homeowners, commercial buildings and businesses, and farmland, I think this is one year in which they probably should have taken a look at their budget and tried to figure out whether or not they really could afford the additional property tax relief, because that's what it amounts to, is it's an additional amount of property tax relief. It's not taking it away. This will be adding more property tax relief than what they had before in terms of real dollars. And I just think that it's good to be able to say that you're going to reduce the structural deficit, but by making that one change alone, they have increased their structural deficit. And I think that's one that may not be fixable yet during the regular run of this session.
There was a lot of discussion earlier this morning about the budget process itself, and the Democrats were quite frustrated that it had taken the Republicans so long to reveal their budget plan. What do you think of that? Do you think that it should be gone about in a different way, that they should have revealed it earlier?
I think each legislative session brings about and is reflected in the budget process the personalities of the leadership. And, you know, the process itself is all done over a 40-day period of time after, you know, we start working on it in September. We propose our budget in December. They have a chance to mull it over and start talking about it. This appropriations process is very complex. And I have a huge amount of respect for those legislators that sit on that appropriations committee, because they go through that line by line by line. And I will not in any way be negative or derogatory in my thoughts or my comments on some very qualified individuals that work this entire time. They don't have a social life during this process. Those legislators are in it, and that's all they get a chance to do is work the appropriations process. And my hat goes off to them. I remember when I was a legislative leader, to actually get people convinced that they should serve on the appropriations committee was difficult back then, and I suspect it's difficult even now. So they do very good work, and they start the session, and they look through each department, and they work through the bowels of government on an item-by-item basis as best they can. And when they get all done with it, now they've had a chance to review. And through that time, they make notes. But remember, it can't come together until you know how much money you're going to have to spend. And the later in the session that you look at how much you're going to have to spend, the better chance you've got to round. It's going to be, in many cases, it's pretty close to what the governor recommends. But they go through, and you have to also remember that during the legislative process, other bills that other legislators are looking at or introducing, they go through the process of moving back and forth as well. We've got a lot of bills out there yet that have an impact on the budget that have not been decided yet. And it would not be fair to an appropriations process to go through and say, we've wrapped our budget up, and now you guys go ahead and play with whatever other bills you've got out there, and then to have that get tossed in at the very end after they've already packaged it up. They're going to get criticized for either not spending all the money that's available, or by spending more money than what they have that's available, and or they're going to get criticized for not telling everybody what their plans are until the very end. It's a process that among themselves they have to have good lines of communication between the appropriators, the leadership, and the rest of the members. And if the members feel that it has to be fixed, then that's one thing. But remember, they do a whole lot of work in a very short period of time. We recognize some of the frustration because, I mean, we work with them, but really a lot of the discussions on, in terms of what the cuts and so forth will be, the Republican leaders delivered to us a list of ideas last night at about 6:30. And that's the first that we'd seen their proposed list, and it may change. It may have changed after they delivered that to our group, and I think some of my folks, the chief of staff and Mr. Dilges here have both asked some questions, which may very well have changed their minds in some of those areas, because, you know, I think they do have a responsibility to further develop and to explain what they're proposing to cut, and at that time then we'll weigh in. Because there's a reason why we proposed the budget in the way that we did it. There's a reason why this year, after not touching our reserves for the first 2 years of this recession and literally holding down expenses during this time, while at the same time continuing services that are critical, this year we believe that it might be more appropriate to reduce the pain that individual citizens are going to feel by using some of those reserve dollars. And do we know where we're at in the recession? We think, and we've seen some numbers. As a matter of fact, we're going to suggest to the legislators that we think that the numbers that we used in December are pretty close to what we're going to stick with now. We're pretty close on that. And so perhaps we've bottomed out in this. Some folks have suggested we could have a double dip in a recession, but you have to manage the budget for each year. I'd like to see us do a strong approach in terms of reducing as best we can the structural deficit, but at the same time, I want to make sure that we don't do it on the backs of citizens in this state that really are relying on state services to get by. Medicaid, education at all levels, including young people that really do want to stay in college right now. So, I mean, I'm concerned about those types of things. And once again, if they want to make cuts in programs, I think that's a fair area to debate. But let's talk programs and whether or not we want to continue programs. And that's the way that we're going to focus our discussion with legislative leaders. I think that's a healthy discussion to have.
Governor, you got to understand correctly that basically what you said just a moment ago is that you believe revenue estimates for our December are pretty close.
Once again, the legislature has the opportunity to actually set their revenue estimates. Our recommendation, after looking at the information and bringing it in, we think we're pretty close. I don't know if we're off $1 million or $1.5 million or $2 million. Jason, are we in that neighborhood someplace?
Yeah. For this year and next year?
Which is good news, because I think after looking at the December numbers, the blizzard really took a hit on this year's revenue. But there was some reason for optimism that there was a little bit of a bounce back. And also the comparative from last year to this year now, we're getting into last year's part of the recession, which was significant. So when you compare the horse this year to the horse last year was running a little slower than so your comparatives from here is to a little bit slower animal last year in terms of the revenues.
So the Republicans are unveiling their proposals today. Over the next week, as this gets shaped into the budget bill, what is your role in the process going to be, and how much leverage do you have as this goes forward?
Well, the legislators will make up their own mind, but we most certainly will explain what the implications are where we can. We're going to ask questions about what their intent is and whether or not they realize what the impact of their suggestions are. We'll also do our best to clarify or to try to get accurate information out to both the legislators and to the public about what the impact would be. I'm not going to go into what they've given us, because I think that wouldn't be appropriate. I think they need to be able to explain theirs, and we're looking forward to getting more details as well, because once they put their details down in more complete form, and we've got to give them a chance to do that, I think you'll find the halls here in Pierce start to fill up with individuals that may very well see impacts that that they don't believe are appropriate. And that's a part of the process. That's a healthy part of the process.
Are there any particular items? I know you didn't want to go into their particulars.
That wouldn't be fair if I tried to share it in my light. I think they should have the opportunity to put it into their perspective first and put some meat on the bones. And then once that's been established, then we'll ask questions and we'll clarify. And once again, in some cases, it may just simply be a matter of them looking at certain numbers and saying, this is what it's worth, and us looking at it saying, you know, we disagree with the amount that you can obtain one way or another. Or in some cases, if there's a case of just a misunderstanding someplace, I'd prefer to have them put their numbers out first and then give them the opportunity to explain them. And then we'll respond. Anything else? Tomorrow's Friday. I will be in Aberdeen and in Huron and in Mitchell. We'll be doing kind of on-the-ground discussions with local leaders in the areas concerning the potential flooding. We try to localize it in terms of what the impact is in their area and listen to them. We do more listening than we do talking in these. The idea is just to get from them a perspective about what they see as their needs, what we can do to help, where the prioritization has to be for the limited assets that we do have, including National Guard, Department of Corrections, prisoners who can do sandbagging and so forth, the resources themselves, sandbags, where they have to be prepositioned, DOT equipment and National Guard equipment. So we had a couple of meetings earlier already in the northeastern part of the state, and really appreciated the great comments and the coordination right now that's already going on in terms of local elected officials and emergency managers. People expect their units of government to be in a position to respond in times of floods, and that's what we're trying to do right now. We're looking at areas in which we can mitigate damage to public infrastructure, where sandbagging has to begin right away in terms of protecting lift stations, electrical stations, and so forth, and kind of identifying where we got to go first and where the floods are going to come first, second, and third, so to speak. So it's going to be a very active late winter and early spring in terms of a lot of water that's got to get out of our state and head downstream.
Governor, what's going to happen with the lease for the playhouse in Custer State Park?
Well, we're still in litigation, so I can share with you that my intent still, and I would still wish I could be in a position to negotiate directly on how we find a long-term solution that will work. But the problem is it takes two, and we started back in 2007 trying to figure out a way to actually help them cash flow their operation at the same time, protect health and safety in that area. They had an antiquated sewer system that just had to get fixed one way or another. And at the same time, they've had a real tough time struggling where they're at. Our suggestion was, is let's try to figure out another place where we could have you go, that people could find you regularly, and where all of these thousands of tourists that come into Custer State Park could have a chance to do matinees, could have a chance to do dinner theater. And that was at a time in which we were bonding for new facilities. We had a $12 million bond going on. And I got a real succinct response back that just said, look, we've looked, and bottom line is we're just going to stay where we're at. We're happy doing what we're doing. And they just didn't seem to get the message that you can't continue to do what you're doing and have the health and safety concerns that had been expressed at that time. And since then, they have not been fixed. And in fact, if anything, they've gotten worse. So, I think if you take a look, I've tried to promote the arts in this state, and I've been a defender of the arts. But it takes two sides to come to an agreement to improve things. And it's been a very discouraging time period on that particular one. They spent more time standing up on a soapbox telling everybody to write letters to the governor than they did actually trying to do any fundraising to fix the facilities that are necessary. And that's just an unfortunate situation. And once again, it's still a matter. If you're going to be in state facilities or at a state location, you've got an obligation to take care of the facilities and to provide a safe location in terms of health and safety. And the sewer system that down there was simply inadequate, and it had to be fixed, and they don't seem to have any interest in doing anything about it. So when that happens, you have to continue down the process of finding another location where they could, or insisting that if they're going to stay where they're at, they got to fix their problems and their messes. They've got to be responsible, and that people don't like to hear that. And sometimes that's my job as governor, is to tell people when they're contracting with the state and they have a lease with the state that they have to take responsibility. And I thought beginning back in 07 we were going to have a good chance to find a plan. And what I got was we like it where it's at, we like what we're doing, and we don't want to change. And unfortunately, that wasn't an option and still is not. There was also... I just had a note handed to me. There was some criticism about the inspections that were done several weeks ago. I did not order those inspections. That was a part of a routine series of inspections that do occur. They occur at all state facilities around the state. This just happened to be a time in which those particular facilities were on the sequence to be inspected. And it had been a while since they'd been inspected. But it's part of a regular rotation of inspections that do occur throughout the state. But they did bring to light just how bad a shape and how poorly those facilities had been maintained.
Governor, just a really quick question. I know there have been efforts for South Dakota to get involved in the Race to the Top program, the federal initiative. And something came over the wire just a minute ago that South Dakota, 15 applicants were accepted today, and South Dakota was not among them. I was wondering if you could address that briefly.
I just received that word when we came in. I haven't received a formal response back, but I saw the same news release probably that you did. Disappointing. Because what we wanted to do was to try a rather unique plan in which we would set up a school for Native American students, kind of following through what we're doing with Gear Up, and to bring them in. And rather than doing remedial work, we do work to get them up to speed for the next year. And we really thought if we could bring it together in the Black Hills of South Dakota, it would be a great place to provide another option for young people that wanted to take the next steps to be eligible for, to get into higher education and continue on. So disappointing that we didn't have the opportunity there. That would have really helped a lot.
Is that charter school plan dead now?
It may be. That's really what the charter school plan was all about. I'll check with our folks in Department of Education and Board of Regents, because it was a combined effort. And we'll take a look at whether or not there's a reason to maintain it. But once again, that was the intent behind that, was to have a position that would be able to utilize the Race to the Top funds. We'll know more next week. Anything else?
Governor, I was wondering, you're visiting the rest of the Jim River Valley tomorrow. Will you be coming down to Yankton or the southeast part of the state?
Yeah, what we're going to do...
Follow tours.
Our expectation is that the flooding potential is probably greater in the north to begin with. That's the reason why we started in the north eastern three counties, and then now we'll do Aberdeen, we'll do Mitchell and Huron. And then I do intend to do some more, and I'll try to do them in a sequence so that the planning and so forth is prior to the beginning of the flooding itself. But I've got a couple other areas that'll probably get hit first before I'm in the Yankton area, but I'll be down there.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah,
I, you know, like, it just, the stuff we got last